Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Federal agencies need secure software. Companies want to provide it. Software supply chain security policy requires both trust and verification for the government, though. For an overview of software industry best security practices, I spoke with the Senior Vice President of Policy and Senior Counsel at the Information Technology Industry Council, John Miller. So you deal with a lot of companies that are facing this requirement for software supply chain security. They're facing it because of government policy. That's what their customers want. What does it look like, and what is ITI telling your member companies that offer software to the government that they should be doing to get into this new regime of software supply chain security?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, we represent companies kind of all across the ICT ecosystem, hardware, software, services. But I mean, the reality, and certainly many federal contractors, you know, and the reality is there's software in almost any technology product and service. So, I mean, it's definitely something that is top of mind for everyone. I mean, you know, you asked what advice we're giving them. I mean, I think one of the primary things we're doing is just trying to explain to them and help them as best as we can make sense of what is, you know, really a pretty complex and evolving set of requirements. You know, I mean, if we consider the broader context, you know, we've got policy guidance and potential requirements that are really just maturing in real time. Everything from the National Cybersecurity Strategy that was just released, which of course includes a software liability dimension, Executive Order 14028, which is still being implemented. And some would say, and I think we would agree at ITI, that the centerpiece of that was really Section 4, which dealt with supply chain security and software supply chain security. And, you know, some of the outputs on the implementation front have been very important there. Things like the NIST Secure Software Development Framework, the OMB memo M2218, you know, and then at the same time, we also are working with NIST on constructing the Cybersecurity Framework 2.0, which is potentially integrating some elements of, you know, things like the SSDF, for instance. So it's a really dynamic environment, and there's a lot going on. You know, I think contractors have their hands full trying to understand where all this is heading.
But they do talk about it. I mean, it's a concern in the industry, fair to say?
I think it's, well, sure. I mean, I think it's a concern insofar as, you know, right now there is not a lot of clarity on what this kind of future state of requirements is going to look like. You know, for instance, again, I mean, a real key linchpin for the contracting community is going to be how OMB memo M2218, and for your listeners who don't know, I mean, this was a memo that OMB published, you know, several months ago on enhancing the security of the software supply chain through secure software development practices. And it sets out really what agencies are going to be required to do in this regard. And the centerpiece of the memo is that it calls on a self-attestation form that is going to be required for contractors. But that self-attestation form is a couple of months delayed. I mean, CISA and OMB are working on it. But, you know, I think everyone's waiting to see it. When it comes out, it will be open for public comment. But I mean, it's hard to gauge the level of concern because, for instance, contractors haven't seen exactly what that will look like and what the agencies are going to require of them. But I will tell you, one of the concerns that the companies do have generally is that even though there'll be a self-attestation form that's published by CISA, the OMB memo actually allows for variance amongst the agencies in how they're going to implement that form. And, you know, the worst thing from a contractor standpoint is to have, you know, a bunch of slightly different forms that they need to use when they're selling to different agencies.
Right, especially with that liability sword kind of hanging over their heads, should that gel up in this strategy, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the liability piece, it's certainly something that I think a lot of folks have been focusing on in the week since the strategy was published. It's short on detail, right? I mean, it says the strategy is going to work with the administration. Well, I'm sorry, that the administration is going to work with Congress to establish liability for software products and services, you know, including minimum requirements. On the good news front, it does also contemplate a safe harbor framework, but it's pretty thin on details. You know, I think everyone's now eagerly awaiting, after awaiting the NCS itself for so long, the implementation roadmap, which we understand will also be published within the next, I don't know, few months, probably. There are a lot of questions on that. And, you know, anytime there's potential new liability for companies, there's going to be some level of concern as to what that means.
Now, the executive order made a lot of comment and a pretty big requirement for the software bill of materials, which they are instructing the government to require of contractors. This is something that has been going on a little while in industry, I guess, not that long, but the SBOM. And so, again, from an association standpoint, what are contractors doing? What do you advise them to do in terms of getting ready to meet the SBOM requirement, which some agencies have already put in place?
Well, I mean, I don't know that the strategy requires SBOMs. It kind of contemplates them as a potential, you know, as a potential requirement, right? You know, again, if we go back to even the executive order, which, you know, again, also contemplated SBOMs as a potential requirement. If we look at the Secure Software Development Framework, which NIST was tasked with writing pursuant to the executive order, they certainly discuss SBOMs as one of the potential requirements. But it's not necessarily that they're not necessarily required. And then if we also look at, you know, even that pending OMB, the OMB memo also, you know, essentially it says that agencies can require an SBOM, doesn't mandate it per se. As we understand it, based on conversations, the self-attestation form, when it is published, also won't necessarily require an SBOM. And so it's another situation where I think there's a lot of ambiguity in this space. I mean, that said, SBOMs themselves, it is something that ITI has given a lot of thought to and worked a lot with our members on over the past several months. I mean, we just recently published an SBOM position paper that goes into, you know, a lot of details about, you know, everything from what is an SBOM to what can an SBOM do, and also to some of the various different considerations around its use. I mean, certainly happy to get into some more details in that regard. But, you know, I think I do think that the bottom line that I would say from an agency standpoint, when they're considering whether to require an SBOM, I mean, there are really a lot of very practical considerations for them that they need to consider. And in particular, I guess I would say in some ways, whether they have the capacity to consume SBOMs at scale in a standardized way. I mean, what should SBOMs contain? There are questions in that regard as well. You know, there are really just a lot of questions around SBOMs. And so, I mean, I think companies are certainly getting ready to use them. I think there's a lot of conversation about whether requirements would actually be a good thing, because that would help incentivize the greater development of some of these various considerations to make SBOMs more immediately viable. But, you know, I think if there was a requirement tomorrow for an SBOM that a company had to comply with, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions and a lot of devil in the details as to what exactly that would mean.
Sure, yeah.
The purpose, right?
And do you get the sense that members are getting an SBOM request, if not a requirement, from their commercial customers? Or is that something that's really not out in industry yet, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, right? I mean, SBOMs exist. You know, certainly some companies are potentially requiring SBOMs. Private organizations might be requiring an SBOM from their user, or I should say their customer. But I think the question is really what exactly, if they're defining what the requirements are they going to be? I mean, right now, I don't think there's not one accepted format, for instance, on, you know, an SBOM, right? I mean, it's also not clear necessarily that an SBOM can enhance software transparency for things like vulnerability management, unless it's linked to a vulnerability exploitability exchange or a similar document, right? I mean, there are questions on delivery and access and distribution and delivery of SBOMs, and also on the consumption side, on the ingestion side. I mean, so one organization could require another organization to produce an SBOM, but it would likely be, I guess I would characterize it more as a bespoke SBOM, as opposed to, you know, looking at, you know, say a federal government agency needing to consume potentially thousands of SBOMs at scale. I think those are different things, right? If we're talking about one organization requirement of one contractor or customer versus, you know, a much greater magnitude of SBOMs being required and consumed.
John Miller is Senior Vice President of Policy and Senior Counsel at the Information Technology Industry Council. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Tamman.
Rancher Government Solutions, the leader for securing Kubernetes and cloud-native containerized applications for the U.S. government, has launched Rancher Government Carbide, a revolutionary supply chain security solution in response to the increasing threat to the nation's software supply chain. Carbide simplifies Kubernetes security management by providing a better, more standardized way for users to verify and validate that their software is safe and secure. To learn more, visit ranchergovernment.com.
Welcome back to our interview with John Miller, Senior Vice President of Policy and Senior Counsel at the Information Technology Industry Council. Our topic is software supply chain security. And the other question comes up is the provenance of software. Agencies want to know, where did this come from? And that often comes up in just what the vendor has coded in its own shop to deliver to whatever customer, the government, if it's custom or even if it's a commercial package. And then that's also related to the open source question. What is the provenance of the open source? Because open source is not totally free of vulnerabilities either. And so many software products are really combinations of open source products configured into such a way as to make an application. So how are companies and what are you seeing in terms of dealing with open source and with provenance of software, which is something agencies repeatedly say they want to understand?
Well, I'm glad you asked those two questions together because they are related, you know, and they're certainly related to the topic we were just talking about, SBOM as well, right? Maybe that to describe software or to talk about software provenance first, you know, when we're talking about SBOMs, we're talking about provenance. What are we really talking about? We're talking about transparency, and certainly transparency as an overarching goal is a good thing, right? To get transparency into software, whether it's open source or proprietary software or anything else. But I mean, transparency and provenance are not exactly the same thing. It's interesting to note that provenance, you know, and SBOM are also not necessarily the same thing. I mean, even though transparency is the goal driving both, you know, if we look at, for instance, another piece of the executive order implementation, right? And NTIA was tasked with defining the minimum elements of an SBOM. The minimum elements of an SBOM don't contain provenance, though, right? So there's different types of transparency, and provenance is potentially something that is useful, but it's not, again, necessarily something that everyone is going to require or want in every circumstance. I know you mentioned that some agencies do want it, and particularly it might make sense for critical software, for instance, but it might not make sense in every context. You know, we can look at how the Secure Software Development Framework treats provenance, for instance. You know, and I think the real key question that you can glean from looking at how it's referred to there is, should provenance be defined as a requirement, right? I mean, it's risk and context based. You know, what is the purpose of gaining knowledge of software provenance? Do we have mechanisms to create and consume any type of provenance information at scale? And I mean, I think it's fair to say that when we factor in things like organizational risk profiles and what the software is doing or anything else, I don't think many companies would, many of our companies anyway, would advise that 100% provenance regarding every piece of software should be the goal of an agency or anyone else, because the ROI on trying to obtain that information is likely very low because all risks are not created equal. On the open source question, open source is certainly, I mean, it's prevalent, right? I mean, it's widespread, it's widely used. It's difficult to have accountability measures in place for all of it. You know, it is also important, right? I mean, why is open source important for innovation? I mean, it allows development teams to focus on creating unique value in their software and not reinventing something that's already a solved problem. But, you know, the core challenges around open source are really that, you know, it's often far easier and more efficient to download it and use it and maybe ask for forgiveness from security and audit teams later than to have it reviewed from the outset. So, I mean, clearly that is something that the federal government is looking at very closely. And I think there are needs to build additional infrastructure around open source. Clearly, it's going to be an additional requirement that federal agencies are considering. But, you know, again, it's going to really be key about risk and context and how are you going to use it. There was one other thing just to say really quickly about it. You know, again, if we look at the OMB memo and the self-attestation form that's coming, if we look at the NIST Secure Software Development Framework, it's a little bit of a confusing picture on open source, because some open source is out of scope, you know, in the guidance for federal agency procurement, but some of it is in scope, particularly when it is bundled and integrated into other products. So it's a complex area, and it is something that we think further work is needed to really provide CRISPR guidance around open source.
Right, and it's also not a set and forget area, because once you say you get an SBOM or you get some kind of an attestation of the provenance of software or the security scans that might have been run, the next patch, the next update, the next added feature, you're kind of not, if not back to square one, you are still back to a situation where you would need that information, because software changes mean new software.
You know, I mean, that's really a great point, right? I mean, I think everyone's probably aware, I mean, this is particularly important. It's important in any context, right? But if we think about it in the context of the federal government, we know that a lot of agencies are using a lot of legacy software, right? And so if we think about the fact that agencies are not going to be on the latest versions of software in many cases, a critical system might have a dependency on a legacy software product, you know, a new version might require more compute resources that aren't available. The contractors are not even necessarily going to have visibility into that situation unless it's communicated to them by the agency. You know, it's one of the reasons that it makes even less sense to just have, you know, blanket SBOMs or scans or what have you as a requirement, and that contractors should focus on maintaining the data itself over a product lifetime, you know, because of the fact that you've got, you know, on the one hand, legacy software that's in the mix that maybe isn't updated as frequently. And then, as you point out, you know, you've also got the reality that software is being patched and updated, you know, all the time.
So does this then fundamentally, all of these requirements or standards and executive orders and OMB guidance and rulemaking and NIST frameworks, all of this apparatus, it seems like it's fundamentally changed the relationship that federal agencies have with software vendors, as the software has, as they say, eaten the world anyway.
I think that is largely true, although I would modify your statement slightly to say that it is fundamentally changing the relationship, I think, of software developers and vendors to the government, who are, of course, the software consumers. But and the reason I say changing as opposed to change is because so many of these policies are not fully implemented yet.
All right. Any other thoughts? Anything that we should know that is in industry's thinking as it tries to fulfill the government's customers' desire to just have software supply chain security, which is the objective of all of these pieces of apparatus?
You know, a couple of things just to maybe reiterate, you know, and then to plug a couple of ITI products that I really do think are helpful. The National Cyber Strategy does signal this really pretty significant change in approach to software liability, you know, as I mentioned before, including both minimum requirements and a potential safe harbor. It's going to be a really important area for contractors and everyone else to pay attention to. Really, another key milestone is going to be the publication of this self-attestation form. It's going to be published soon by CISA and OMB, and we're really going to need to see what that form requires. And if you're a contractor, you know, I think you're really going to want to complete those self-attestation forms, and you're going to need to in most circumstances. From an ITI standpoint, you know, as I mentioned, we do have a position paper on SBOMs. We also have a set of principles on software security labeling, for instance, and we didn't even really scratch the surface of the labeling topic, but that ties into this whole tapestry of the changing relationship regarding software security as well. You know, one of the other hats I wear is as the co-chair on behalf of the IT sector of the CISA-led ICT Supply Chain Risk Management Task Force. We have a software assurance working group that is currently producing a buyer's guide that is going to be a really helpful resource for contractors and others who are really looking to, figure out how to implement some of these new requirements we've been talking about. I mean, it's organized into four sections: software supply chains controls, secure software development controls, secure software deployment controls, and vulnerability management controls. And it's just really important to stress that there are differences. That these requirements are going to hit everybody, right? And they're all going to hit everyone in different ways. Software developers, software vendors and suppliers, and the software customers or procurers, you know, they all have a role to play here, and they're all going to be facing new requirements in one way or the other. You know, so that'll be a helpful resource for folks. And then finally, the international landscape. You know, all of our companies do business globally.
Sure.
It is not just a discussion here in the U.S. Just for example, there's a very active discussion on software liability and product security requirements more broadly going on in Europe right now, something called the EU Cyber Resiliency Act. So that's something that we're also closely tracking. And, you know, that might also even further complicate matters for global companies who are federal government contractors.
John Miller is Senior Vice President of Policy and Senior Counsel at the Information Technology Industry Council. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions on Federal News Network.
Rancher Government Solutions, the leader for securing Kubernetes and cloud-native containerized applications for the U.S. government, has launched Rancher Government Carbide, a revolutionary supply chain security solution in response to the increasing threat to the nation's software supply chain. Carbide simplifies Kubernetes security management by providing a better, more standardized way for users to verify and validate that their software is safe and secure. To learn more, visit ranchergovernment.com.